Yeah.
What's the story?
My first question is the format. Okay, so last session, Rabbi Cohen said that we should never discipline in a time of anger. So, which of course makes sense. But I have a baby and I'm a 2-year-old, and my 2-year-old likes to jump on top of the baby and like clobber his head on the floor. And, you know, like, do all those sorts of things that, like, when my brother-in-law comes, is like, oh my gosh, is he gonna, like, break the baby skull open and, like, sorts of scary things? So, like, when that happens, I'm angry. And, like, I'm scared for my baby, but, like, I'm very angry that my 2-year-old's doing this. So, basically, what I'm trying to say is, like, it's a time of anger that I'm disciplining my 2-year-old in. Like, I'm taking him away and I'm putting him in time out. That time of disciplining him is like.
Well, you know, let's make a distinction. When there's something dangerous involved, that could be dangerous. You know, it's a different set of circumstances. A kid runs across the street, you know, like, no matter how angry you are, you got to do something that he or she will get the message that this is not going to happen again. You know, that's like sakona. Sakanta chamir mi isura. Sakona is worse than anything else because, you know, if you do something wrong, you could correct it. Sakona could be tragic. So I think you shouldn't worry about that if it's, you know, but under normal circumstances, though, it's not very effective. In other words, they really have to see and they sense from the earliest stage that you're doing it for them. That's the message. I'm doing it for you. If I'm doing it for you, then it's in a sense, discipline can even engender love. You know, Hashem Yochiach, the one that Hashem loves, that's the one He reprimands. But they have to be able to sense that. You know, not like the old-fashioned guys beating the kid, almost killing him. Says, "This hurts me more than you." You know, like that's not real. But in a sense, that's, you know, like you show it, you explain it, you know, you even say, you know, "I love you dearly, but this is not acceptable." It's good if something allows itself to calm down and to deal with it a little bit later. Now, you're right. The younger the kid, the more the disconnect will be.
Right.
If you 2 minutes later, he doesn't connect it. But a kid who can understand, then for sure, you know, like, you know, it used to be, when your father comes home, you know, and today, I don't know, the father's, I don't know who's going to do what. But that used to be the fear. Your father comes home, you know, I'm going to tell him. And, it was good in a certain sense because, again, whatever happened was not because of anger. The thing had passed already. And to whatever extent you can, in a normal situation, it's best to wait a little bit to calm down. And really to express, make it very clear that whatever disciplinary action I'm taking, it's for your benefit. And that's why the anger is no good. Because of his anger, the kid sees your anger. Most kids are smarter than their parents. Forgive me. That's just the way it is. You should have nachas. You have some of the kids that are smarter than you, you know. Nobody's jealous of their children. But that's what it is. Kids are very, very smart. They get it, you know. And therefore, I think, to whatever extent you can communicate that this is for your benefit, it changes the whole equation.
But it's like not really for his, like in his mind, it's not really for his benefit because he wants to lie on top of the baby.
No, but even so, first of all, even if it's for the baby, it's not you. You can't do this to the baby, you'll hurt the baby. He doesn't want to hurt the baby, he wants to have fun. Unless it's, sometimes kids really want to, you know, they're jealous and this, I don't know, they have to try to explain that to him, you know, that you're going to hurt the baby and I cannot tolerate this. We can't let you hurt the baby. And if you hurt the baby, you know, you hurt somebody else, there's consequences. You know, they have to learn that. You tell them up front, if you do this, this is what's going to happen. So the more conversation, the more explanation, the more logic to it, the more the punishment has to fit the crime. That's a very, today in schools, they mess this up sometimes. You know, a kid does something and they make him write over 100,000 times the who knows what, you know, no shaykh is, you know, there has to be, again, discipline is from the Sheirish disciple. You want to teach. Discipline is to teach. That's what Yisurim are. Yisurim are not suffering. Yisurim are as lessons. That's what it is. It's Hashem is teaching us a lesson, and that's to whatever extent. And in the context of love, it's much more effective. You know, it's much more. I mean, if you could say, you know, I love you dearly, but I can't let you do this, and therefore, you know, I'm not even sure. I don't know. I'm not even sure. Even with a little kiss, and you know, I'm doing this for you. You know, it may not work all the time. Nothing works all the time. You know that. But in the long run, I think you have a much more well behaved and more stable and secure child. You know, I had an experience this week which I want to change it a little bit, you know, from what it really was, but a parent was aggressively abusing the child for over a long period of time. And this child is already a young adult. You know, I'm not sure, whatever age, let's say, I don't know, 20, let's say. And the child couldn't come to grips with the fact it was being abused. It was denying it, and, you know, could describe what happened, but couldn't internalize the implication until he made a statement to the tune of, he was doing it for himself. He was embarrassed about my behavior. Then all of a sudden I felt that it clicked. In other words, when they see a negative motivation, then it becomes, they're not even motivated to rationalize that really you love me or really you care about me, but you're just doing this for, you know. So you gotta be very careful. The more we can, and again, we mentioned last time, children are not sure today that their parents love them. It's a fact of life. I mean, again, well, any facts that we say are only norms, majority, you know. But we do not live in a generation where children will swear that their parents live for them. If whatever we could do to show them that whatever we do for them is for their benefit, we're helping them to be secure, we're helping them to feel loved, we're helping them to be motivated to want to do the things that we're suggesting or telling or insisting that they do.
What's the best way to teach, like, a young kid how to share?
Oy. Wish we could talk about older kids. look, like in everything else, it's every teaching, it has to be a few-step program. There's the intellectual, and then there's the motivational, and then there's the emotional satisfaction that they get from it. Intellectually, we do have to talk to our kids about sharing. The truth is, the Torah gave us the best formula. But, and I shouldn't say the Torah gave it. The Lashon of the Gemara is really, that which to you is hateful, don't do to your friend. But the way they say it over, and there's another Lashon that says, like, you know, the English translation, the rough thing is, do unto others as you would have others do unto you. Okay? I don't know where that comes from exactly. It's a misreading maybe of Madaloch Sani L'Chavachu Sabit, maybe, I don't know. But that idea, in the Sefer HaChinuch, you find it all the time, it says, if we act this way to other people, people will act this way to us. And that's, I think, an intellectual thing they should understand. You want people to share with you. You have to share with them. And the truth of the matter is, it's probably some mystical law of creation. That's just the way it works out. A person who shares, people like to share with. A person who doesn't share, people don't want to share with. So, it's just, and that lesson, even from the youngest ages, you should share because you want others to share with you. Now, that's the intellectual piece. It's not enough. But you always want an intellectual basis because as the kid gets older, it has to make sense to him or her. Okay, so that's what makes sense. Right? On a very simple level, we want people to share with us. We have to share with them. You have to do, and it's a mitzvah. You know, mitzvahs are at a certain stage they could hear that, but at a younger age, more practical is, right? Then the second thing is that the motivation, bribery is one of the best motivations. You know, I mean, now bribery doesn't only have to be money. There are many ways to bribe, but you call it incentivize. I know, I use the word bribery just to describe what it really is. You know what I mean? But call it incentivizing, okay? An incentive, you know. If I see you do this, you'll get an extra toy because I see that you share, so I want to get you something else so you'll be able to share with more people or more siblings or more. So already, there's some motivation there. Not just that I know it's a good thing, but I'm motivated. You bribed me, right? You gave me an incentive to want to do it. That's the second piece. And the third piece, I think, is the reward. And the reward is making a child feel good about himself. Wow, I'm proud of you. That's beautiful. That's so nice. You made that person feel so good, and I feel so proud of you. I'm so happy with you. You make me feel so good because you made that person feel so good. So I think this is like a three-pronged approach which can really be very helpful. The intellectual and the motivational, and then the reward. In other words, the motivational is a bribe, but then there's the good feeling. And as we mentioned, I'm sure we mentioned last time, I don't believe I ever talked without mentioning it, is that the ultimate happiness is about validation. The more we can validate our children, the more they will grow up normal, healthy, happy, feeling good about themselves, stable, and really ready and capable of listening to us and the things we have to say to them. So I think that's like, you know, that's a pro. Now again, all of these things have to be adapted to different ages, you know. Right. Certain ages, you can't even talk to your kids, you know what I mean? Then that happens later on again. As they get older, you can't talk to them again. There's a stage in the middle where you can talk a little bit. But be that as it may, but you know, you have to figure out what exactly you're dealing with. But I think on those are the areas that you're, and this validation is very, very important. As long as we're talking about validation, let's just mention again that criticism is devastating. I was very proud of the fact, I don't know if I mentioned it here because I don't remember the timing of the last time I was here, but I gave a session for teachers in Los Angeles a few weeks ago, and I got some feedback that in the girls' school that my daughter was involved with over there. So, and one of the teachers gave some feedback and said, I went home and I told my husband that for 1 week we're not going to criticize our children. Wow, what an accomplishment. Who knows what they did for the mental health of these kids in 1 week. You know, criticism is devastating, especially when it comes from a parent, especially when it comes from a mother. This is the person, the one person in the world whose love I'm supposed to be able to count on. It's natural, it's instinctive, it's genetic. And oh, she thinks I'm no good.
Is there ever a place for that? Like, maybe not criticizing, but saying, like, I'm so disappointed. Right. Like, I've definitely done that. Like,
right.
Oh, I'm so disappointed. I can't believe you did that. Like, is that... Right. Is there ever a place for that?
Like, well, if they didn't share. Like, you just... Like,
I would say... I would sort of say, you know, you're such a good person. Mm-hmm. You should really be doing that.
I
maybe I shouldn't say this publicly, but I can remember the last day that I went without tzitzis as a little kid because the Rebbe said to me, he says, you're such a good student. I came without tzitzis. You're such a good student. You should be wearing tzitzis. Since then, not one day. You're such a good student. You should be wearing tzitzis.
You're saying the same thing.
Just what?
Right.
You're saying the same thing, just more gently.
That's right. It's right. More gently and more positively.
Positively.
In other words, because you're so good that you should expect more from yourself. Disappointment sometimes may, again, there are extreme situations, and look, if we're not thinking about never say never. I never think never, because there's never going to be never. You know, so we're just talking, generally speaking, the positive way of doing it is much, much more. Is more, you know, that's what. And because I love you, and because I respect you, because I think you're so good, and nobody denies that, you know? disappointment? Nah, she has no right to be disappointed with me. I'm so good. Who's going to deny that?
Can a 2-year-old understand that?
I think so. I think everybody understands good and bad. You know, we've given it to them either directly or indirectly. Either because they heard a lot how bad we are, so then they understand what good is, or because, you know, we've given them good. But I think so. Again, you know, the younger they are, the harder it is. But you're such a good kid. You're such a good boy. You're such a good girl. You know, such a good girl. I remember when I kid too, good girls don't do such things. Good boys don't do that. You know, that's the lesson part. That's the intellectual part. But that's the reason. And you're such a good child. You're such a good person. I don't know. I think that's a much better twist on it, spin on it. And, yeah.
Normie mentioned bribing or incentivizing kids. I saw a lot with kids that then they do it just to get what they're getting. I have a family member who only will do a certain thing if she gets a candy or if she gets, you know, she gets what she wants.
How old is she? 16, 17, 18?
No, but if we're talking to little kids, a 2-year-old will tell 5.
Chazal told us, Le'oilom yasek odem b'teiru mitzvahs afilu sheloy lishma. Shemitech sheloy lishma bo lishma. A person should do Torah mitzvahs even for motivation, for some type of a gift, a candy. The Rambam says you should give out candies when you're teaching them. Because mitech sheloy lishma, the decision to do it for what you're giving them will eventually lead them to be more comfortable and more motivated to do it. Now, it may take a while with some people, and you know, you have to watch that. And if you feel that there's no growth in that area, then maybe you have to rethink how to do that. But generally speaking, that works. Once they get comfortable and used to, you know, and then as they get older, you can begin to educate them that, you know, the good feeling that you have for doing something good. Or, why do you think I was always giving you candies to do this? Because this is such a good thing to do, and you're such a good person. And therefore, if you do good, it's so beautiful, it's so wonderful. It's so, and then maybe the self-worth and the validation becomes a substitute for the candies. And that can happen and should happen at an older age. But I wouldn't worry too much about that, because also, when they get used to a certain type of behavior, they can end up doing a lot of the things that we want from children are not deeply intellectual. We just push it to the conduct, you know, to be able to live civilly in society. And those things, they get used to it. So they, everything is, there's nothing is absolute, but generally speaking, there's always exceptions.
So liberally using bribery is like acceptable.
I love it. Everybody's using my word. Good. Like it. Okay.
I'm saying that's like would be considered like acceptable chinuch to just be liberally bribing.
And again, well, don't say, "Hey, I'm bribing you," because they're bribing. They'll hear that word. They'll say, "Oh."
But using that as like a methodology for.
Yeah, that's right. That's encouragement. That is encouragement. The kids. Each person understands on his level. That's the first thing they understand. Lahavdil elef avdolos, please forgive me. That's the way they train animals. And a kid at the youngest age, again, please forgive me, we're not talking about present company's children, but a kid at the younger age has a lot in common with a little puppy, with a little horse, with a little this, you know, and that's a sugar cube, and this, and again, it becomes a habit. It's conditioning. We want, on a certain level, we do want to condition certain basic behaviors. Then when they're well conditioned, we can now take them up to the next level. But on a pera odom, you know what a pera odom is? Avil dechaya, a pera odom, you know what that is? It's hard to take them to the next level because they don't have the basic civility to deal in a normal way.
Is timeout like a disciplinary method that you agree with?
So I must admit, timeout was invented after my children were grown. So I don't know too much about it.
Well, we love timeout.
What?
We love timeout.
It's like
here.
A basic survival method.
Yeah. Survival of the business.
No, so I'm familiar with. I mean, I hear about it. You know, but I don't know from firsthand experience. But I imagine that what it really is a very a reasonable type of a thing, because it's not so painful. But it really says that in this society right here, or in this room, or in this family that's interacting together, this behavior is not acceptable. So someone who doesn't behave according to the way we're supposed to over here can't be part of this, at least temporarily, until they learn the lesson. But I think it shouldn't be done in an empty way, like, you know, right. You know, but I think it has to, listen, you, and with an, again, a two-year-old, I don't know, but a three-year-old begins to understand that, you know, the way you're behaving, it's not acceptable. You can't be part of this family, of this group, the way you're behaving right now. Therefore, you go in there, calm down, cool off, think about it a little bit as an older kid, you know, see, realize yourself what's wrong with this, and then in 5 minutes you'll come out and you'll start over again and everything will be. And see, in Musa, it's also very real, because giving a person almost like, what am I going to do in that room? I'm going to think, what am I doing here? And that's very, very helpful. The person stops to think what they're doing. That's the first step to correcting one's behavior. Because the problem with most behavior is we don't even stop to think. So you have to think. And I would say, look, think about what this is. Think about it. When you come out, I want you to tell me why you were there. What's something, you make it educational. One of the major, I mentioned before, one of the major problems with discipline that's used today is it's not educational. It's irrelevant. It's punitive rather than disciplinary, creating the disciple. It's not supposed to be punitive.
Some parents, when like the kid does something wrong or like not so nice, say like, oh, you're making mommy so sad. Is that like a good thing to tell kids? I feel like it's not fair to tell the kid that they're making their parents sad or upset. The kid is a kid, and is it better to just explain what they did?
I think so. I mean, that's sort of taking unfair advantage of them. You know, I would almost say, forgive me, it's a form of mild abuse, maybe. You know what I mean? Oh, you're making me so sad. You make, like, you know, that's not what it's about. You know, life is not about you. Life should be about me. And again, I was just thinking before, or as you started to speak, or right before, it's so important if we could let them know over and over and over again, whatever we're doing, whatever we're suggesting, whatever we're enforcing, it's all because we love them. It's all for their benefit. You can't say that, but you have to say, can't just, you know, I made fun of it, I'm sure I do it all the time. Love you, bye. You should never do that, because that cheapens parental love. You know, that they say, say in a business meeting too, almost, you know, today. Business letters also, some people, you know, it's crazy. Come on, that's not what love is. Let the kid know that you are the most important person. I told you the story with the discipline with the kid that didn't behave the whole year, and then they finally, the principal every day. No, I never told you the story. I'm surprised, but let me tell you, it's a very, very important story. This kid was a terror. Every single day was sent out of class. And the principal speaks to him, sends him back to class, and the next day the same story. Until one day before Pesach, the same thing happened, came back after that, an angel for the rest of the year. And nobody understood what happened. They almost were afraid to ask the principal, like, well, finally somebody asked the principal. He said, I don't know. I said the same thing to him I said every day. What happened? So he calls the kid, and he's very curious. He says, well, I'll tell you what happened. You were talking to me, the same speech you make to me every single day. And all of a sudden, the secretary came in and said, there's a very important person on the phone now that must speak with you. And you told the secretary, I'm talking to the most important person in the world right now, and I cannot interrupt. That was it. Who knows? This is a story. I don't know if it really happened, you know. But it doesn't matter. But the concept is good, because it could have happened. You know, it really could have happened. And if we convey that message, that's such a beautiful message, you're the most important person. I love you so much. This is everything I do is because I love you, because you're, that doesn't mean not to be firm. And forget, firmness is a sign of love. And firmness is what gives a child security. If a child feels that they can always maneuver their way out and they can't count on what the parent says as being, this is the way it's going to be, it creates a very shaky mass of an insecurity in them. They worry like what? You know, I have nothing to rely on. I don't have a... It's the pillar of my life is shaking. You know, I'm firm, but I'm firm with love. Firm with love. And I constantly letting them know how much I love them. And saying it, but even more important, showing it. And, you know, there's another thing, too. Sometimes you have to show anger. Like you mentioned before, about, you know, it's a dangerous thing that's happening for the child or for somebody else. But if even after you do that and you calm down and the situation passes, you let them know, I don't think that behavior is not acceptable, but I love you. How much I love you. And I only was so strong with you because, you know, there used to be a song that, like, hundreds of years before you were born, sometimes I hate you and sometimes I love you. And when I hate you, it's because I love you. It's not a song you want to sing to your children. But anyway. but that idea, sometimes when I hate you, it's because I love you. So even when we lose ourselves and it's because I care so much. I worry so much about you. Again, always, if they could feel that security, that we love them so much, that changes everything. But it has to be real. I mean, it is real, but it has to be expressed in a real way.
I have a question, but you just reminded me with this about if a kid, let's say, is with like a toy and throws it at someone or something, and you say, you know, you take it away, so they start crying, and then you say, I've seen this or I've done it, are you going to throw it again? And my son sometimes says, yeah, but if they say no, and you give it back, sometimes I'll do that once, but then the next time I'll say, no, now you did it again, now I'm taking it away. But, like, is that bad to do that? Like, are you going to do it again? No. And then you give it back to them.
Well, I mean, what is bad about it?
I don't know. Let me tell you my other question. You'll see, like, my mind is, like, in some, like, place that, like, I need clarification. Let's say a kid has, like, I've seen this all the time. Like, a kid wants a knife. Like, or, you know, they pull a knife off the table. So the parent is like, no, you can't have that, but they run and get them like a plastic knife or something. I cannot handle that. I don't know why. Like, why are you getting your kid a plastic knife? Why are you getting them a knife from the kitchen? Like, it's just no. Like, you can't have it. So, like, I don't know if I'm, like, really, like, crazy, but, like, I'm, like, even if the kid cries, like, no. And even if, like, if my kid, somebody takes a toy from him, I'm just like, okay, but people run and, like, replace it, but I feel like that's life. Like, sometimes a kid's going to take a toy from you. Maybe I'm like mean, he's 1.5, but, like, I don't know, I just feel like, you know.
I think you're really referring to two different things over there. One is, there are certain things that this child should not have, and you don't have to find a semi-solution to it just to make sure that he's not... I see the similarity too, but they're two different types of frustrations.
Right.
You know, and we don't have to be weak as parents. And we don't have to tolerate things that we feel are dangerous or, you know, inappropriate. And we don't always have to find a semi-appropriate substitute for something that's very appropriate. If there would be a completely appropriate substitute, for example, instead of a knife, you give him a spoon, you know,
right,
that I would understand. But to go with a plastic knife, she has to have a knife. One of the lessons we have to learn in life is we don't have to have everything we think we have to have. Because if we don't learn at a young age, we can learn at an older age, and it's a lot more painful, a lot more real at that age. So I agree with you. And you don't have to jump in that. Again, you know, it really expresses a little bit fear of our children.
Right.
We're supposed to love our children, And I believe we're supposed to respect our children, but we're not supposed to fear them. We don't have to be afraid of them, you know. I mean, at the older age, they got this new fear now. Oh, I'm going off the derech, you know what I mean? Okay, so we'll have to deal with that another time. Right now, Baruch Hashem, your kids are not going off the derech. You know? Well, okay, you know, I wish, I hope we have 10 years on that one, you know. But anyway, but you know, right now, you know, so they don't have to have everything, and sometimes that firmness, that's what, it's, we have to be firm, but still loving and respectful. And if, for example, if he needs the knife for something, he's cutting something or this, they say, listen, the knife is not for you, but I'll cut it for you. Something, address the need, you know, that's one thing. In terms of the toy, I think I agree with you. We don't have to make it that our kids don't have any disappointments, minor disappointments. In fact, the minor disappointments are very good because you get used to, you know, coping and you know. But if it's a very big thing, and it really is, he just got this new thing, and it was for his birthday, and it's the only thing like it, and somebody comes and takes it away, you know. So I guess, you know, there's a judgment over there. But I don't think we have to, we don't have to be enslaved by our children either. We don't have to be afraid of our children. And we do have to let them have minor disappointments. We should not sit there rooting for the boxing match when someone's beating him up, because look, he has to learn, you know. Mm-hmm. And my dad used to say that it was very good, you get beaten up because they're going to beat you up anyway, so you might as well get it once or twice so you know how to fight back. You know, so we don't want that today. Hopefully it shouldn't happen yet.
I have two questions, not related. One, someone I were very close to has kids who are, I guess, like older. Their oldest is 10 or 11. And I saw them like throwing tantrums, and he tells them very calmly, he's like, you could throw a tantrum in a different room and come back to me when you're calm. Is that like a normal thing to tell them? And I just feel like a lot of parents like try to calm their kid down and try to like deal with it. And both these parents are like, I totally understand you. You're so frustrated. You could throw a tantrum, come back to me whenever you're calm. And they do that with all their kids, and their kids would cry for 10 minutes.
And then
come back into the room and ask what they want.
But they're calm.
So they learn
calm. Not as calm as, you know, a calm kid, but not screaming and kicking.
I that's too specific a question. I really don't know how to deal with that. There is such a thing, but that's if you see the kid always does that. You know, so that's so you don't have the whole background, or maybe you do. I don't know. If the kid always does that, and they constantly, you know, doing these tantrums, and you've tried to help them to avoid it, so now the only way is to go, calm down. And, you know,
are you supposed to help them to avoid it? That's my question,
I think so. I think so.
It's I feel not, like every kid.
It's not good to have to always have a tantrum and have to run and lock yourself in the bathroom. It's not a very healthy way to grow up. So, but it could be in certain situations where that's it. There's no, they've done the best they can. They try to help them. They try to, you know, to calm them. They try to show them that they're there. Sometimes, you know, there was once in Yerushalayim, like 50, 60, 70 years ago, a Professor Halperin. He was the psychiatrist, the neurologist, I think he was both, and he was like the professor in Yerushalayim when it came to mental health. Like in those days, it was a little primitive, and he was the number one man. And they asked him once, what is he? Or they interviewed him once, and he said, when he has a problem that he can't handle, he sends it to Rav Aryeh Levine. So they asked Rav Aryeh. They said, what is Rav Aryeh? He wasn't a psychologist. He really was, because he was a master of understanding people. But they said, what do you do? So he says, I just listen with a little mitgefühl. Mitgefühl means empathy, empathetic listening. Sometimes when there's a tantrum or a situation like that, what we have to really do is empathetic listening. Not sympathetic. Sympathy is never, I feel sorry for you. That doesn't make me feel good about myself. Empathetic listening says, I'm choshev, you understand? You feel my pain too. That means my pain is legitimate. You've legitimatized me, but somebody also, I shared it with somebody. And that sometimes can relieve what's bothering you. What's the problem? What are you getting all excited about? And listen now. It's very hard to listen. The more children you have, the harder it is to listen. You're busy, you're torn in many directions, you know. But that listening is so validating. Because listening says that you care about me. That's validating. You love me. And what I have to say is worth listening to. So you make me feel good about myself. So it really, and I think in situations like that, sometimes empathetic listening can do what psychoanalysis won't be able to do, and what, you know, other things will not be able to do. Now, sometimes if that doesn't work and they have no choice and that other system works.
What if the kid is too little? Even my daughter, let's say, when she's 16 months.
Does she talk?
What?
Does she talk?
No, but maybe she's just way too opinionated for her age. But if she wants something, she could scream 5 minutes straight because I didn't give her, like, a candy or I took away a bag of Bamba. The other day, she literally was just crying. And I looked at her and I'm like, I'm really sorry. You can't have it. And I turned around and went back to doing whatever I was doing. Because there's no, like, I can't listen to her. She's just crying because she wants more.
Yeah.
If I hold her, she pulls my tickle and my glasses and punches me. So
it's
not like,
it's very developmental, right? It's very appropriate to them.
I would suggest she could express herself,
how am I supposed to deal with it? That's really my question. Like, do you just let them do it?
First of all, even if she can't talk, usually they understand before they can talk. Right? Is that correct? I think so. Mm-hmm. What? They understand before they do. They understand. In fact, you know, the first word you should teach them, I mean, Torah Tziva Lo Moshe, but after that, I love you. Let them know what love is. Let them know you hold them. I love you. You kiss them. I love you. There's a body language there. And then when something is, listen, I love you. And you know, but I can't give it to you. It's not good for you. And sometimes they get it. They get it. I can't do it. I love you. And this, I'm sorry. But we got to be strong. Listen, kids are not easy. I know. I don't know if I mentioned it here again the last time, but my mother-in-law, Zogizum and Starkzai, misled me many years ago. She said, with each kid, it becomes easier. So I, in my naivete, thought that if you have five, it's easier than when you have four. She meant each one individually is easier than the previous one because you get more used to it. So, but when you have three or four or five, it's not going to be easier than when you have one. It gets harder and harder. So, you know, we have to cope, and sometimes it's not easy. We have to do the best we can. It's very good to be able to find time for each one. We could listen to them individually. Some people are very disciplined and they can do it. They have a certain time set. This one's time, this is that one's time, this. I don't know, but it's something to keep in mind, though, because you know, that attention and that concern can. And don't underestimate what they understand or what they get. And body language, they certainly get. Look, how does a little baby smile when you smile at them? You know, they stop crying when you pick them up. There's something there. I think little babies are smarter than adults, personally. Mm-hmm. They get stupid as they get old. But there's certain things. There's something going on over there, right? Reflex. I don't know what it is, but there's something there. So, you know, I think that's what you have to work with.
I have an unrelated question. At what age do you start, like, enforcing mitzvot, like, making brachos or waiting between machatz and fishes, washing? And the second part of it is, what's the response when the kid, like my 4.5-year-old, says, I don't want to? Do you just completely ignore it? Do you say, that's okay? Like, what?
Okay, so let's just some general principles. Number one, there's a gather of called higia lechinuch. They reach the level where they should begin the chinuch process. Chinuch Rashi defines as Tchilas Knisas Odom Le'umnes She'osid Lamidoy, the beginning of the entry of someone into a profession, a trade, something, a life's activity that he's going to continue doing. So this is just the beginning of the entry. You want that beginning to be pleasant. You don't want it to be overwhelming. You don't want it to be negative. You want it to be burdensome. If it starts with negativity, it's not good, because then it's always associated with, a brocha is always associated with an annoyance. My mother, she's holding back the thing. You can't have this until you make the brocha. No, that's not the way, man. You mumble the brocha. No, you got to say, I'm going to root every little. I'm hungry, leave me alone. So it has to be a positive experience. I think that Higia L'Chinuch means that they can understand it. And Higia L'Chinuch, by the way, there's no universal age for Higia L'Chinuch, and there's no one universal age for all Chinuch. It seems clear from the Halacha that as they can understand a concept, they become Higia L'Chinuch in that concept. So a brocha is something that they could understand at a relatively young age. I don't know exactly. Generally speaking, you know, we start young, but something that they're thanking Hashem. This is from Hashem. This is a gift. Look, you enjoy it. Didn't you enjoy it last time? You're going to enjoy it again. Say thanks to Hashem. And when they get a little older, even, you know, the Kuzri really says the reason that they were masakin the Birchas Hanenin was that we should appreciate and enjoy the food more. Because if we make a brocha, I say, hey, this is not taken for granted. Like this, a person eats, they don't even know they're eating. They don't enjoy it. Ooh, make a brocha. Ooh, it's a gift. This is a gift from Hashem. That's something. As you hold it in your hand, you have to hold it in your hand. You look, you see. So there's a process there of appreciation. So I think that's, if they can't appreciate, then I'm not sure that chinuch means anything. In fact, in halacha, it says, if a child is too young and they don't understand, they say the brocha, you're not allowed to say omen. Because it's not really a brocha. It's not a brocha on chinuch, you're allowed to say omen. If they higia l'chinuch and they say a brocha, you're allowed to say omen. But if they're not higia l'chinuch, then the brocha is meaningless. So you see from there that chinuch is something real. So, you know, you have to see each stage what they can understand. Shabbos, they can understand. So, you know, now we're not allowed to give children to do something that's forbidden, even though they don't understand. That's called to give them, you know, biodayim, to give them treif to eat, to you know, to get them to do something that's in it. But other than that, mitzvahs, when it comes to doing, we have to, you know, wait until they can understand something, some rudimentary idea of what's going on. That's number one. Number two, let me just this one more point. Number two, that if you pressure them too much, it becomes negative. Unfortunately, the sad lesson of our generation is that the smarter and the more sensitive kids are the more in danger of rebelling against Yiddishkeit. Because it's the mashal I like to give is the hearing aid. Somebody has a hearing aid, a very delicate mechanism, turns it up high, and then you whisper. And he says, why are you screaming at me? Because the hearing aid is so high that this little whisper sounds like you're screaming at the top of your lungs. The religious pressure to these kids sounds like too much pressure. The smarter they are, the more sensitive they are, the more they internalize the pressure. They become overwhelmed. They can't handle it anymore. They run from it because... So we have to be very pleasant. Makes it less pressure. Explanation makes it less pressure. Voluntary at the beginning makes it less pressure. This is something I want to do. I'm motivated to do rather than I'm forced to. And especially in a generation, because they'll tell you, well, in previous generations, they used to really, today's world, you can't force them. I say, I don't have any control over my children. What? You're still living in the 50s or the 60s? Nobody controls their children. You can't control my 3-year-old, let alone my 13-year-old. You know, like, we live in a different world today. So we need motivation, we need pleasantry, we need excitement, we need enjoyment, we need reward, we need these types of things. So the chinuch process has to be something that's pleasant, that's gentle, that's, you know, and meaningful when they can understand it. So, and it's better, forgive me, it's better to err on the side of caution. Because when you push too much too fast, you can really do damage. You go slowly, you know. I know, they used to quote Rabbi Yankov Kamenetsky when the parents called him up and said, "This my kids, my young kids, they jump all over the Shabbos table. They climb up on the table, they're jumping on the table, the house, it's a..." So he was a very practical person, very small. He says, "Did you ever see an adult jumping on the Shabbos table?" He says, "They'll grow up." And then his famous line was, "Kinder dürfen spielen." Children have to play. So, you know, that's their life. In fact, by the way, part of the way to respect them is to respect their play. Like I always give this moshel of his building with the Lego or something like this. And you're insisting he has to come eat, has to come take a bath, has to go listen. This kid thinks he's building the Empire State Building. You know, this is the real world. You know, this is it. And you come along. And Cholila v'chas, the parent gets so angry that the kid doesn't come and walks over there and kicks the whole thing. And it's like an act of terrorism. It's like destroying the Twin Towers. That's what it is. It's exactly the same thing. Destroying the Twin Towers. So we got it, you know. Anyway, but that's not exactly this point. But I think with chinuch, it's better to go gently. It's better to err on the side of caution. It's better, what?
Let's say with
Mitzvah, like, yeah. Oh, that's a wow. Parents and teachers both. The first thing they have to know is what not to see. Very important lesson. Now, if something is dangerous, if something is really, you know, then you have to see it. But otherwise, what you could overlook, what they don't know that you know, so you don't have to step in there and, you know. But it should be, you know, everything is divrei chachomim benachas nishmoim. Everything is with nachas, is with, you know, it's a whole different thing. And of course, every child is different. Chanoich lanar, b'dalei, every child is different. One can appreciate, one can handle, one can't. Too much pressure, too little pressure. But we should be aware that pressure hurts. And, you know, pleasantness never hurt anybody. Motivation doesn't hurt. An explanation makes the hurt much less.
Even an explanation, like saying smart and sensitive, that's exactly what makes sense. Yes, tons of questions. Why can't we do this? Why can't we do that? Oh, because it's Shabbos. You know, why can we do this today? No, like this just happened Shabbos. We just found ourselves saying so many times, like, oh, we don't do that on Shabbos because, and it just.
How old?
He's 4.5.
I think you should do more than that. First of all, we have to hit this issue on many levels. Level number one, make sure you have things there, games and stuff that's just for Shabbos, so that after everything is said and done, we can't do this, can't do this, can't do this. But these are three things that I can't do during the week. In fact, I can't find them during the week. They're locked up someplace, you know, and they're only for Shabbos. Oh, and every month or every 2 months, I get new stuff for Shabbos. So this association becomes something positive. That's one. Number two, we don't do this. It's not very educational.
I don't know if that was like the what? Bad
wording. No. I understand. I'm not criticizing.
No, more like it wasn't coming from us saying you can't do. He was asking a lot of questions.
Yeah, so I would. But you have, some explanation that Hashem created the world, and when it came Shabbos, His world was complete. So we also live in a world where everything we have to do is done for us. And we can't, we're not allowed to turn on a light or do this or to write or to this because when Shabbos comes, we can't cook everything we do before. So Shabbos should be a day of rest. And to a young kid, the rest has to be playing with, you know, special toys and this. But you have special Shabbos toys. Shabbos is special. Special Shabbos clothing. Special Shabbos, you know. And but fights about it don't help. You know. You know the trauma that some yeshiva bochum still have today about the hat fight? I have one guy, yeshiva, wonderful guy, Mitsuya. Well, somebody a year or two ago, I don't remember, was offering $300 to buy people hats. So this guy likes money. So he comes into my office. He says, I was thinking of taking the money. He doesn't wear a hat. I think of taking the money. So I said, okay, not a bad idea. He says, do I have to wear it? He says, like, what are you taking the money for? You know? He says, I said, well, maybe on Shabbos. I can't do it. Such trauma. And it came from the years of fighting at home. You know, I'm not saying that there aren't things we shouldn't insist on. I'm not saying which things there are, which things there aren't. At this stage, for what I guess, you don't have to worry about your kids wearing hats on Shabbos. You know what I mean? Not yet. But I think that we have to be aware that the pressure, fighting, and arguments leave a lot of trauma. You know. And Agav, this kid, says to me, he says, I'll do it for you, though. I said, for me, ain't doing it. You know? You're not doing it for me. When you're ready, you'll do it right now. But it's not, you know. So, but it's we have to be careful, you know. And whatever you can explain, or whatever you can make it fun, and you know, Shabbos table, we make a mistake. We sometimes don't make it children friendly, you know. And it's very important. And we think, oh, we're doing the parshish questions. Not for every kid is that children friendly. Kids that like it and that know all the answers, that maybe is children friendly. Kids that don't like it and feel embarrassed or feel you're just testing them, and you know, and so a lot of people keep candy or something on the table, you know, and they ask the parsha question, or you get an answer, get something. So, but you got to make it interesting, you got to make it exciting, you got to make it worth their while. You got to, you know, and they should not be forced to sit at the Shabbos table the whole time. That's it. Terrible mistake. Some people even insist that they sit fully dressed at the Shabbos table. You know, they have to wear something. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But you can't. You know, they have to be reasonable. You know, singing is very important. If they enjoy singing, and let them. You know, the more we can involve them, it's there. You know, and then they want to be part of a family. They want to be. You know, the human being is a sociological word, I forget, but as a creature of, you know, groups, likes to be part of something, but, you know, it has to be something pleasant, you know, a pleasant experience, and if it's centered around them, it's many people who have guests on Shabbos have a thing that Friday night, they don't have guests. Friday night is just for the family. We have guests on Shabbos afternoon, right? You know, it makes a difference, and even when there are guests, the kids sit in their seats, you know, even though there's a guest in this, but the kid feels a little bit neglected and insulted when he has to give up his seat. Now, in previous generations, it was different. I still remember these older women when I was younger talking about how on the Lower East Side, and the Orchim used to come every Shabbos. They had all these Orchim, smelly Orchim they had. And they didn't, they, you know, didn't have to take showers. They did this, and they had to give up their beds. They slept on the floor, and the Orchim slept in their beds. You know, and they had 2.5 rooms on the Lower East Side. We don't have kids that can handle that today. You know, we don't have that security, that family structure. So we have to, you know, be careful that they remain the center, even though there's guests. You know, we talk to the kids, and then speak to the guests too, but. Very important. And it should be fun. Shabbos should be fun. You know, and I guess if the father falls asleep at the table like I do, then it can't be too much fun. You know, but many people, I used to laugh at these people, but they're right. We go to sleep Friday afternoon to rest up. What are you resting up for the Shabbos? I couldn't understand it. You know, but they're there for the kids. They're there for the, you know. Anyway.
One more question? Oh, no. Just one more on that topic. So what would be the correct response? So do you want to wash? Or, I don't know, I can't think of another example right now. So no. You just say, okay, no problem. You know, just...
Yeah, well, at a young age, washing, they certainly don't, you know, unless it becomes a habit, but if they don't want it, you know.
Right, but if, like, they specifically say, no, I don't want it, ignore it.
I wouldn't ask. Everybody gets up to wash. I bet if everybody gets up to wash and you just don't say anything, mm-hmm. you'll probably get them, you know, get them coming.
Say like with the like 1 and 2 year olds, something happens to them, and they keep on falling, they always cry. So either you can go and distract them and give them another toy or something, or you can, like, teach them empathetic and give them hugs. Do you have to, like, give them hugs and calm them down every time, or can you just be like, oh, no, it's okay, you're okay? Or is that just, like, quieting their...
I don't know. I mean, you know, I guess that even the most positive thing, if it's administered too often and for too cheap a reason, it becomes trite. So from in that sense, I could hear that, you know, you don't want to make it. But I don't know, love is like a child. It's so, so powerful. And our kids are so insecure today. I tell you, the mood in the world is that we don't believe our parents love us. So anything you can do. So I don't know, you know, it's a balance. Don't overdo it, but it's good to, you know, you can't go wrong. Nobody ever got hit in the face for being nice. You know, like, that's not just another thing just comes to mind. Somebody, there was this big question going around. Whoa, such an important question. Should a parent ever apologize to a child?
Why not?
I was fuming when I, stupid people. If you hurt the child, you apologize. You know, what do you think you are? You know, it's not, you know, so it's like you have to deal with them with real bein olam chaveiro and really sensitive. And again, what we would want people to do for us on another on a childish level, that's what we have to do.
I have a question that's not related at all. If a kid, my husband's friend came over tonight and wanted to give my daughter a bath, just because he loves kids and he was like there to help, so he gave her a bath. And then I was thinking to myself, I'm like, is that not appropriate? He's a married guy who is very close to my husband and has been in our house a lot, so
I wouldn't let him in your house anymore. No, I'm not serious about that, but
is it really a thing to not let boys bathe?
Is it like just because it's a girl, or it's girl or boy?
I'm saying, so what do you do when you have boys? You don't have a girl babysitter? No, I'm really asking. What do you think?
Yeah, I have a baby. Very paranoid about the same.
So you have a boy babysitter?
Don't have your
babysitter's
baby children.
A bath is different, right?
Yeah.
No, so what do you mainly do?
To change a diaper, you have no choice. Even that today, there are people that have the camera focused right on the place where they change the diapers. You know, today we live in a crazy world. Don't be naive. Don't be naive. You know, they used to say from the Chofetz Chaim, Rabbi Abramsky, Rabbi Chatzko used to go to Lavdor of Ismarei, and he told me, he used to say, I think from the Chofetz Chaim, he says, Tomim tia im Hashem alikecho. You should be innocent with Hashem, but not with people. Innocence is not with people. You know, you should never learn such a thing. I'm sure nothing happened. Don't worry
about
it.
No, I know, but I'm saying, let's say, what do people do that have boys and need a babysitter? I'm really curious.
It's different for a teenage girl doing
the changing. Why? The point is that you have to teach your kid that a stranger who touches you in places where only mommy and daddy touch you is not going to be.
We can't teach him that if he's bathing her.
Well,
if
a married
man,
I don't
know,
like,
what?
Well,
if just want to
bathe your kid
at night,
like at night, you go out, your kid
want to
go to bath.
No, but let's say even
if you change a diaper, it's
different. Like, every
time.
Yeah, diaper, you have no choice. But even that, it would be.
So,
babysitter
shouldn't bathe your kid?
I don't know. Okay. With that olive? No. No, I don't think so. Not, look, I would say in any time, it's certainly today. Today, looks. I know what's going on here. You know, I get a fair share of the world's problems, and there's so many problems today. There's so much perversion, and there's so many holier-than-thou looking people who have serious problems. So don't be neurotic. Don't, you know, and don't not go any place, and don't not have a babysitter till your kid is 21. But be careful. Should only take someone that you know, that you trust. Cameras are not a bad idea.
What about, I don't do this, but people think I'm crazy then. I'm just curious. But having like boys like Bachrim come and babysit at night, like even from the yeshiva.
While your kids are sleeping
or whatever.
You don't do it?
Well, you have two?
Personally?
Well, first of all, if you have it like that, you have girls, boys, what do you? Kids.
I have boys, but just in general.
So why would that be bad? I'm so naive. You're saying you could like go and do something like that.
Yeah, look, the point is like this. Just like you, if you would hire a babysitter, you would check references, and you'd be very concerned. You should be concerned even with yeshiva bochurim at the moment, and to know somebody, you know, who knows them. And if you have two, it's better. You know, then there's a little bit of a... But don't become neurotic. But no, because most likely everything is fine. But in today's world, you can't be naive either. Don't be neurotic and don't be naive. You know, we have to find a balance in between.
Okay. On that note, thank you so much.
Okay. A pleasure.